Good evening, everybody. Welcome. I have to thank you all for, I want to thank you all for taking the time to come. I know unless Sundays are different in Baltimore than in Lakewood, it's not easy getting out on a Sunday evening. I feel like in the spirit, Baruch Hashem, of the tremendous siyum that we all experienced in various ways last week, I told my husband, I said, I vacillate between two things. Either I'm learning the same daf every single day. I do brachas on the days every single day. It's the same. I said, he at least moves, right? I'm doing the same thing. And then I told him, you know what? Skip that. I make a siyum every single day, the hadron. When we say hadron alach, mesechtas, whatever it is, it means I shall return to you. I say hadron alach to the laundry, I shall return to you tomorrow. Hadron alach to the dishes, I shall return to you tomorrow. So I promise you, everything you left at home is waiting for you. So relax and enjoy. And we're here as a Hashem together to partner with the school, parents, mothers, teachers, hanhala. And I feel like with all of us in the room for this lofty goal, surely the Eibush is here with us as well. So I want to offer a tefillah up on behalf of all of us here at Tzayin Shetisha Shechina B'Masa Yadenu, that the Eibush should give us the kayach and the wisdom and the knowledge and the ability to instill that which we also badly want to instill in our children. We should be zeicha to that Siyata D'Shmaya. So the school program is kavod all around. Always raise others up, never down. And our mission as mothers is to partner with the school and bring this to reality at home as partners with the moros and the teachers who are doing so much in school. So our question is how? How do we do this? And this is what I hope to explore with all of you tonight. How we can instill these values of kavod all around in our dear children. So I think the place we all start really is kavod atzmi, which in other terms we could call nechbados. And let me explain. What this means is, in simple English, is self-respect. But let's explain it a little further. Self-respect means that before I can even show respect to anyone else, I first have to feel within myself this dignity and this self-worth and knowing who I am, what I stand for, what's important to me, and most of all, that I am a child of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as such, I have this dignity and self-respect. A few examples before we go into explaining it. I was speaking to a friend of mine, she's actually a granddaughter of Rav Gedalia Shor, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and she told me that when her grandfather was Nifter and her grandmother, Rav Tzishor, was left alone, there was a grandchild boarding at that time with her. She was going to school in Vara Park, and she watched her grandmother set the table. The grandmother lived alone, but she watched as she spread a starched tablecloth over the table, and then she put out the china, and then she put the cutlery and a cloth napkin, and the table was set as if very important company was coming. So she asked her, she said, Bobby, who's coming? And her grandmother squared her shoulders and she said, I am somebody important and I am going to eat supper. The difference between sitting down to such a table and sitting down. Now, ladies, I'm with you if you're serving on plastic, right? But we get the idea. It says about Rav Elia Meir Bloch, again, these are just stories of godless. It's not what I do. Just to give us an idea, his children never saw him without his rekel, without his jacket, his outer garment. The children of Rav Schwab remember their father. It's still in Germany, in the early years, shortly before World War II broke out. And every single rabbiner in Germany was in danger. The arrest could happen at any time, day or night, and they would be taken. And Rahman al-Itzlan, many of them were killed in a terror where they were hung in public. And Rav Schraub Sr. went to sleep every single night, fully clothed. I know how we wait to just take a shaito off and change it, right? Every single night, fully clothed. And he explained that were they to come for him in the middle of the night, he had to be dressed respectfully. He was a rabbiner. Not to be hung in public in his night clothes. And these stories could go on and on of examples to give us an idea of what this nechbados means, what this self-respect. And Rav Huttner explains that this is one of the big misyanis of our generation. This feeling of just a shiflos, of people feeling low, they don't feel important, they don't feel their self-worth of who they are. And what's the danger, he explains? The danger is that when someone feels lowly, they could be drawn to lowly behavior. And I heard the following saying, my bechira begins where my self-respect ends. I'll repeat. My bechira begins where my dignity ends. Which means that when a person has that gaiva diktusha, when a person has that dignity and self-respect, they're not drawn to behaviors. There are behaviors that are below them that they would not even consider. I heard the following story from Rabbi Sadia Grama of Lakewood. He was saying that once a family was taking a trip, a long distance trip, and the children were preparing gum for the trip, and his wife would not touch it. And she explained, she said, when she was in 10th grade, she was in Beis Yaakov of Muncie. I don't know how many of you have a connection to Beis Yaakov of Muncie, but there was the Rebbetzin at Beis Yaakov of Muncie, Allah Shalom Rebbetzin Salvation. She was the Rebbetzin. And Gitti was once chewing gum as a 10th grader. And the Rebbetzin saw her. And she's like, thinking, what's going to be now? And all the Rebbetzin said was, Gitti, you? She never again touched a piece of gum. That was her dignity. And that's where her bechira, her nukudas ha-bechira began. Again, we're not talking about those specific. It's just to give us an idea. I remember once I had a parking ticket, and I made the foolish decision to try to go to court to see. It was such a waste of time and whatever. But I was sitting there waiting for my turn, and there was a policeman standing guard at the door, and he was chewing gum. I remember looking like, this is many years ago. I was still surprised in those days. Unfortunately, the world has lost this dignity, and that's why it's so much harder for us to fight it. It's so much harder for us to conjure up this self-respect, because the whole world, my daughter told me she was in the airport, there was a woman waiting online to check in wearing a sleeper. I was thinking only she was dressed. It's like, a few years ago, I was invited to speak for a London seminary. They were having Shabbaton, a retreat, and they told me that it's taking place, and that in London, the retreat is taking place near Wales. So one of my daughters, who was very well read, said, oh, mommy, make sure to check out the castles over there. So I thought she was kidding. Guess what? The Shabbaton was in a castle. It was an old castle that had been redone to be used for school events. And I remember the teachers came in and they kashered. I couldn't get over. I know we go to school showers. They arrived and they kashered, but that's not my point. I remember this castle. When you walked in, there was this magnificent, very wide staircase, you know, wooden steps, very ornate, very beautiful wide staircase. And then when I went to the kitchen on the side, I noticed a narrow, small staircase on the side in the back. And it said on top, gentleman's staircase. And I remembered my sister-in-law told me that her parents took a trip to Rhode Island. They toured these mansions that they had there. And she said that there were two staircases in those mansions. Why? Because the women, they wore these wide, billowy skirts, and when they would come down the staircase, their skirts would lift a little bit, and it would not be appropriate for a gentleman to be on the staircase when a woman is coming down and her skirt lifts a little bit. So I saw the gentleman's staircase over there. That was the non-Jewish world. So we've come a long way, and this is what we have to start with. When we think about instilling in our children this basic dignity of who I am as a practical idea. A friend of mine told me this. She said, there should be a line in the house called, it's not bechavadik. In other words, if a child is talking a little too loud, not, oh, you're talking too loud, it's not bechavadik. Her hair is a little too long. It's not that your hair need, you need a haircut or it's too long. It doesn't pass. It's not bechavadik. The way someone is sitting, a little girl is sitting on the floor and holding her legs in a way that's not dignified. It's not bechavadik. If we take the word nechbad, we could have an acronym. In English, it works a little better. Nun, chav, beis, dalet. Nun, neshama inside. Carry with pride. Be dignified. And if that could be our mantra, if we really feel this for ourselves as our first starting point, this gaiva de kedusha. Now again, it's not to be confused with gaiva. Like someone once said, I could feel great, I cannot feel greater than. That's the difference. We're not feeling greater than anyone, we're feeling as great as, right? It's all the same. The neshama inside is what everybody has. So that's step number one, is this inner nechbados that we feel, how we dress at home, how we speak, how we comport ourselves, how we go out of the house when we run an errand, or I heard about the carpools that get run over here. So I guess I think Lakewood traffic is terrible, but my kids go on a bus in the morning. How we conduct our lives with this feeling, sit up in your seat, square your shoulders, know that you have that neshama inside, and carry yourself with pride and dignity. And once we get that, we're ready to move on to step two, which is, of course, extending it to others. So now I'd like to talk about kavod acherim, extending this to others. And I want to start with a mashal from the Dubna Magid, where the Dubna Magid asks, how does one become a mashpia? One who gives to others. A mother is the ultimate mashpia. Besides for her physical giving, her emotional giving, her mental, it's all around giving. How do we become that mashpia? So the Dubna Magid explains to imagine a vat, like a big barrel in the middle of the room, and there's a whole bunch of small cups, like little bowls, around and around. How will that vat be able to fill all those little bowls that are around? Only by overflowing from itself. And he explains that a mashpia is someone who fills himself or herself up so much that it overflows to others. So what I want to try now is to fill all of ourselves up that we'll come home so full that it will overflow and it will be mashpia on our families. So how do we get to the root of this, of kavod acherim? And this is really a part of a journey that I took that actually came about. Mrs. Neuberger mentioned the Ateres program. It was a Tzniyas program. I don't know how many of you remember or were part of it or are familiar with the Friday night Tzniyas learning groups that we did for Hashem for many years. And it was part of my journey, which I don't have time now. It's not the topic, so I'm not going to explain all of it, but I want to explain how it ties in. Someone was ma'ayrim me, after many years of being involved in different Tzniyas efforts, that there is a downside. Anytime someone is growing in any area of Avodas Hashem, they tend to notice and to look down at others who aren't. Anytime someone's working on becoming better in anything, it's human nature that you tend to notice others who aren't. And when we notice others who seem to be doing less than us, we rush to judgment. And we end up not thinking positively about them. So that's really the idea in a nutshell, which on the topic of tzniyas, there's a whole elaboration. But I'm taking this in the topic of kavod, because part of this is the whole concept of understanding that we have no idea what goes on in anybody's life. I always say it's good we're not made of glass, right? Every single one of us. When we say the word face, when you look at someone's face, in English, it corresponds to the word facade. All you see is the outside, the facade. When we say the Lashon Kodesh word for face, the word is panim. Panim is connected to the word pnim, which is internal. As a Yid, when I look at someone's panim, it behooves me to look deeper and see their pnim. And what I mean by this, and I'm sure every single woman in this room is going to nod along with me, we have no idea what goes on in other people's lives that are dictating how they're acting and what they're doing, and how it, whether it's in their Avodas Hashem, in their Yiddishkeit, in their spiritual lives, or in their physical lives. And the first thing we have to know when we want to work on respect of others is to know that you don't know. That's the first step. We have no idea. I remember years ago when I had three little ones, one of my daughters, my second one, had a tendency to punch other kids outside. I'm not embarrassed to say that because Baruch Hashem, she's a grown young woman. And my mother always tells me that when she came with me to the park would empty. And Baruch Hashem, now I have no need to patch or anything. So she had this tufa. She was a two-year-old, and she was, you know, in the neighborhood. So I never let her go play outside herself. I had to keep an eye on her. Anyway, one day, I had an infant also, and I was feeding the baby. And the baby was like just about, you know, when they're falling asleep, and if you give it another good few minutes, they'll be sleeping for a while, but if you stop too early, you put them down, then they're up for the next few hours. So while that was happening, I heard my front door open and close, and that meant that my toddler had just gone out the front door, and now I have a dilemma. And I was safe for her to go. I had a large front yard. I lived on a den of blacks. I wasn't afraid for her, per se, but like I said, she was a menace to society. But on the other hand, I was feeding the baby, so, I said, you know what, I'm going to give it another few minutes. And I'm feeding the baby, and I'm finishing up, and I put her down, and I run outside, and I meet my neighbor, and she has her hands on her hips, and she's holding her, she had one little toddler, and she tells me, it's inexcusable. My daughter didn't do anything yet. She just was outside. And I remember gathering her up, and like, you know, excusing myself, it was inexcusable, but I apologize. And I went inside, and I closed the door, and I was thinking to myself, honey bunch, when you'll have three kids, we'll see what's inexcusable, right? And then my next thought was, I had a lovely neighbor down the block who had eight boys in a row. And I used to sometimes see what those eight boys in a row used to do. And I used to think some things about what those eight boys in a row used to do. So the next thing I told myself was, honey, when you'll have eight boys in a row, then we'll talk about what's inexcusable. I have one yingala, and he's my baby, and he's 10, Kanainara. So I've yet to be able to judge the mother with eight boys in a row. But what I learned was, we can never understand what's going on in someone else's life. I remember once attending a school Shabbos with my high school girls, and I'd given the workshop, and we were up late at night, and we were kumsitzing and singing and schmoozing. And finally, I was finally going to my bungalow to sleep when a sweet girl came up and said, Mrs. Feldman, can I please speak with you? I wanted to say no. I was exhausted. I said, sure. And I'll never forget this, because we were walking behind the bunkhouse. I still remember where we were standing. And this girl who was GO president, a 12th grader, GO president, straight A student, popular, well-liked, balas midos, everything going for her, poured out a home situation that literally had my hair standing on end. And I was thinking to myself, okay, I'm making a shift. And that's many years ago, because my daughter was now in 11th grade, was the baby on the Shabbaton then. But I remember making a conscious shift. And I was thinking to myself like this. It used to be once in a few years, the principal felt the need to apprise a teacher of a specific situation of a child in the classroom. And she would tell you this and the child is in this situation, just keep it in mind. I think of it like this. You're dancing at a chasana. And you're in that, you're not dancing, you're out like in that, you're dancing, but behind that, you know, the inner circle that's going around and those that are wearing these weapons of mass destruction on their feet, you know what I'm talking about. And you're standing right behind, and someone steps on your, right, it hurts. And you hobble over to the side, and she says, no, it's fine, you rub your foot for a few minutes. And after a few minutes, you rejoin the dancing, right, you manage it. What if someone has an infection on their foot, or an ingrown toenail, and someone steps on it? You're out for the night. That's it. And I realized this is how we have to walk through life. I'm saying this as a teacher, as any human being, Every single person out there is walking around, not with a pain on their foot, but a pain in their heart. And we never know if our one word, a lack of kavod, a little bit of a cross word, or not a chavetic look, could hurt them so deeply. It's like if someone touches you, fine, they touched you. If you have a sunburn and someone touches you, it kills. And that's really how, if we would walk around with this knowledge, that every single person that I meet has a whole pnim that I know nothing about. I don't know their upbringing. I don't know their parents. I don't know their home situation. I don't know their financial situation. I don't know their challenges. I don't know their nisyonos. One thing I do know, it's certainly not simple. And this gets truer by the day, so I'm sure everyone's with me. Everyone has something. We had a magnet they were giving out in school, and it's a famous saying, be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a battle you know nothing about. And that's really, I think, the root, that if we would work on these feelings, the feelings of compassion and understanding for the challenges of others, it would translate itself into actions and words that show kavod. If you know someone's struggling, you know someone's going through a hard time, you're careful. But just because I don't know about it doesn't mean it doesn't exist, right? To myself, I could extend that compassion because I know what my life is all about. Everyone else is in the same boat. So how do we, I think the problem with us doing this, at least with me, is that we measure others by the yardstick of our own life. I'll explain what I mean. There's a yardstick. Let's say each of us has a yardstick. And that's the measure of our life. And on the yardstick is how much physical energy we have, how much emotional energy we have, how much stamina we have, how much sleep we need, how strong we are, right? And then we take this yardstick that we measure our lives and we apply it to someone else. You know that sister-in-law who, whenever we make Shabbat Brachah, she always somehow gets out of helping? Or that relative when there's a Hanukkah party, never. Once I spoke about this, and I met a lady in the grocery afterwards, and she told me, she said, could I, she thanked me and whatever, she said how it helped her so much, and then she asked me, could I just add one thing? I said, sure, I'm always looking to add. She said, could you change one thing? You said, even with family, could you change that to especially with family? And the reason why it's especially with family, I don't mean children growing up in the same home. I mean once the family, right, once siblings move out and you don't know every detail of everyone's life. Why especially with family is because with family, we think we know. We think we know what's going on in their lives. We don't. We don't. And therefore, if we could have this feeling of respect for every person's struggle, and this will translate itself into the action. So let's go through some practical of how we can put this into action before we move on to the next point. Number one, smile. That's a show of respect. Smile. Right? We all know the famous Bamali Musa would say that a face is Rishus HaRabim, not Rishus HaRabim. That's not my face. It doesn't belong to me. You see it much more than I do. Smile. Give that smile. Compliment. Every single person could use a compliment. Everybody needs chizuk today. How much respect we could show someone for what they do and who they are by giving a compliment. And no, we shouldn't think that anyone is above it. I heard a story about the Mashgiach Matzio Salomon. You should be gesund. There was a tragedy that happened in a certain community. A child was nifted in a very tragic way. And this was years ago, and Mashgiach was still b'koyach. And he traveled there, and he spoke first for the men in the yeshiva, and then the men in the general community, and then for the women, and then everyone. He spoke many times to be mechazek, and then he went home. And not long afterwards, someone came over to tell the mashgiach that the oilam was so mechazek, and the kehillah was so strengthened by his words, and the mashgiach was like, gentlemen, really? Thank you so much for telling me. And the person was taken aback. Mashgiach was a master orator. And a fountain of chizuk. He has to hear this compliment, and Mashgiach said yes. Everyone could use a good word. Everybody. If we could have this this approach of every person who crosses our way, let me, or maybe that's asking for a lot. So three times a day, let me make someone feel better about herself. And it's so easy. You know, it was not long after I moved to a new neighborhood, and there was a new grocery store. It's very disconcerting to get used to a whole, even within your own community, just to get used to a new, you know, the new bus stop. I'm sorry, I don't mean to rub it in. Anyway, I was in a new grocery. There was a new grocery two blocks away from my new house, but we still went for our main shopping to the grocery we always used to, but we would run in here, and I always felt like it was a bit the end. I was running into this grocery, and I was just buying the minimum. I didn't have such a good feeling about it. And one day I was there, and I met a friend of mine, and she lived at the other end of town. And I said, Chana, it's so nice to meet you here. What brings you all the way here shopping? She says, I want to tell you something. I really like this store. It's not too big and it's not too small, so you don't have to, it doesn't take endless amounts of time to get through all the aisles. I know where everything is. Everyone is so nice in the store. Even the people pack the bags. And when she was saying it, I was thinking, you know, she's right. It really is a nice store. It's a nice size. She changed my whole perspective on the store in 25 seconds. What did it take out of her? It's unbelievable. We have such a kaya. She gave this kavod to an inanimate object. It's not only to people. We'll get to that in a minute. So we said smile, compliment, don't interrupt. Basic kavod. Someone's talking. Wait till they finish. You know what? When we talk, we're not learning anything, so we know what we're saying. When we listen, we're learning, so we benefit. But really, this is basic kavod and respect. Make eye contact. Oh, those phones, right? Let's make eye contact. Now, yeah, here. Someone told me that they were at a PTA and the came in for the PTA. It took the time, the parent came, and the teacher was busy with like papers from his packet, and the parent became quiet and like was waiting, and the teacher said, no, go on, go on, I can hear you. And the parents came home with a very not good feeling, the eye contact of showing that respect to somebody else. Acknowledge someone's presence. They came into the room. Acknowledge that someone's there. Say hello, greet them. A soft tone of voice shows basic respect. So let's share some stories. Like I said, we should be that overflowing vat of inspiration in this topic. There's a very well-known story about a mashgiach in a large, he was a kashrus mashgiach in a large plant. And he was, and unfortunately, when he was about to leave the building in the evening, finish his rounds, he figured he's going to make one last check in the freezer. You probably know the story. And he got stuck in the freezer. By the way, today's day, don't get frantic if you get stuck in a big freezer. They don't do this anymore. You can't get out from inside. But he could not get out. And he's slowly feeling himself getting colder and colder and colder and colder. And everyone had already left. No one's going to miss him. It wasn't like he was going home that night. It was out of town, away from his family. And it turns out that he was found, mamash at the last minute, before he was losing consciousness. What had happened? There was a non-Jewish security guard who guarded the entrance. And this mashgiach never, ever left without saying goodnight. And when this security guard did not get his goodnight for that evening, he realized this man is still in the building, and he made sure that they found him. Not every story has such a dramatic ending, but the difference that we could make, famous story about Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, who would greet, I grew up in Muncie, so I know exactly where they're talking about, Saddle River Road, where there's this convent where the nuns are, and he lives down the road. He would always greet them. To positively protect someone else's kavod, to save others from embarrassment. There's a story about Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel, when he was a chassan, and he was davening for the Amid, and this is when he was young and well, and he was stumbling over his words. As a chassan with the Kala's family there, and when someone close to him asked him afterwards, they knew that he was a fluent reader and a fluent davener, why was he stumbling over his words? He said, because in the kahal, there was an avil saying Kaddish, and he was stuttering, and he didn't want him to feel bad. So he wanted to show he's also not so fluent in speaking. To put his own kavod down to protect the kavod of someone else. Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael Lubchansky who is probably well known to us more as the uncle of Rebbetzin Bichna Eisen, Rebbetzin Bichna Kaplan, where she grew up because she didn't have parents. He had in his shul, and this is back in Europe, the shul had a large oven where they had to come, the Shabbos would come early in the morning, before that, well before davening, and he would stoke up the fire in the oven. That was his job, to make sure that when people would come, it would already be warm. And the Shabbos had been coming for, like sometimes he slept a little late, he came a little late, the shul was cold, people weren't happy, and then one fine day, the Shabbos realized, when he would come to shul, the fire was already red, it was already burning bright. He kept quiet, he figured someone's helping him out, he's not saying much about it. He was wondering who it was, he had no idea. He did not know that it was Mashgiach himself, Rabbi Yisrael, who would come extra early to light the fire. One day, the Shamash comes, and now he's going to get to see who it is, because what did he see? This big oven, and someone's leaning in, he just saw the back sticking out, someone's leaning in, and he's stoking the fire. He had no idea who it was. So with a friendly greeting, he gave him a smack, and he said, good morning, or something. So he greeted him. And Mashgiach knew that if he's going to find out who it is, he's going to be mortally offended. He's going to be so embarrassed, he won't know what to put himself. Mashgiach stayed in that oven, and it was already burning. He waited till there were enough people in shul that he's able to just slip and mingle amongst all of them. By the time he took his head out of the fire, his beard was singed, halfway gone. He didn't want to embarrass someone. That's the literal meaning of Noyach Vela Adam Shiapil Atzmo Lusov Kivshan Heish Mamish. That's what he did. Rav Yishuv Leib Diskin. Story is told about a bacha who prepared his coffee every morning. And one morning, he put in salt instead of sugar. Now, not too long ago, someone gave me this thing, this remedy, but rinsing my mouth in salt water. I have to say, I didn't manage to do it for more than a few seconds, and I didn't even swallow it. Rav Diskin drank the whole thing with the salt, a few, teaspoons, just that this bacher should not get embarrassed. These are the lengths that our Gedolim went to protect someone else's dignity. My husband told me a story about Rabbi Ramin Ganachovsky, who was a genius, and he used a lot of his ingenuity, we were discussing geniusness in the car, we were on the way to see Mashas, we were saying geniusness, ingenuity really means his creativity, but he used his creativity to how to make people feel better about themselves. And the story is told us once his chavrusa came on Shabbos to learn with him, and the chavrusa began on Shabbos, and he rang the doorbell. And he was so mortified, he didn't know what to do with himself. No one answered the door, no one came to the door, and he's waiting a long time later. Rabbi Avram comes to the door, and he's wearing a robe over his pajamas, and he's making his eyes like he's all sleepy, and he apologizes that he just woke up, and he feels that it took him so long, he's coming down a little later than the usual time. And this chavrusa understood that this was just a ploy, that he should think that he didn't hear the bell ring. But imagine, he ran upstairs, changed into his pajamas, made his whole spiel so he shouldn't feel bad that he rang the bell on Shabbos. Rabbi Avram Gerwitz, I read the story in one of the Maggid books, The Splendor of the Maggid. He writes about a few bachurim in the yeshiva in Gateshead. They were playing, they were having some kind of shtick with each other, and one was running away from the others. I don't remember exactly what happened, but one of them separated from the others. He didn't want the others to catch up with him, so he locked himself into the library, into Eitz HaSvarim. And he's in there, and suddenly he hears a knock at the door. And he says, who is it? And the answer is, the Rosh Yeshiva. So he says, I know it's not the Rosh Yeshiva, it's you boys trying to get in here, I'm not opening up for you. And here's the voice saying, it's the Rosh Yeshiva. He says, you can't fool me, I know it's not the Rosh Yeshiva. A few minutes later, there's a knock again at the door. It's the Rosh Yeshiva. And he's carrying on, and then suddenly it occurred to him, maybe it is the Rosh Yeshiva. Oh no, he's going to be so mortified to open up the door. But he had no choice, he had to open the Rosh Yeshiva. And he opened the door, And what he sees is the Rosh Hashiva is going like this. And he shows him to run out. To protect his dignity, that he shouldn't be embarrassed. When we have it within ourselves, to put ourselves into someone else's shoes, how would I feel if this was me in this situation? What could I do to somebody else? You know, the Torah doesn't reveal the name of the tree that was the Eitz Hadas. To protect the dignity of the tree. Imagine if we knew what it was. Ladies, imagine we knew which tree Chava ate from. I would never eat the fruit of that tree. Are you kidding? To protect the dignity of the tree. Hashem even protected the dignity of a Russia. Hashem killed the donkey of Bilam. Imagine, this donkey would have been such a Kiddush Hashem. I mean, they would have been paraded, and, you know, I don't know if it still would have been talking, but this is the donkey that shamed Bilam. No. The donkey was killed right afterwards. Because even to protect the dignity of a Russia, certainly everyone we meet is far, far, far from anywhere near that category. How much we have to show dignity to others and to teach children, even to inanimate objects. I mean, I'm not saying, I know Rabbi Grunfeld, Alei Hashalom, says a story of when she first came to Eretz Yisrael after the war, and they were housed in tents, the DP, the displaced people, they didn't even absorb them yet, they were in tents. And she said she was walking by the tent and she tripped on the peg that held the tent. And she said in true British fashion, she pardoned to the peg. And the girls were all laughing. She explains it, how she told them she's from Beis Yaakov, and that's how they warmed up. They thought she was very odd. But they apologized. Now, I'm not saying if we walked into a pole, we should apologize to the pole. But if we walked into a person, right, to show that dignity with children, to call food by its proper names. Can you pass the yellow stuff? No. That's, I don't know, scrambled egg or whatever you want to call it, right? There's one word, when my children use it, I really try to, I don't even like to say it, but when they say like this food is gross, I'm sorry, I don't like to say it, but kids use that a lot. My mother has a tea that she gives out for various that help, herbal tea that helps with various ailments. And so I give it out of liquid. And anyway, a lady called me once for it. We don't charge for it. And it's, Baruch Hashem, is tremendous hatzlach and helps many people in a difficult situation. And someone once called and she tells me, oh, it tastes gross. And I was thinking to myself, something that's really helping you, why would you call it that? I don't remember if I said anything or not. But I remember reading about Rav Mordechai Schwab. He was called the Tzaddik of Muncie. When a sack became torn and it was no longer wearable, he didn't just throw it in the garbage. Rav Schwab would wrap it in a paper bag and he would say, Esaf Mergit Badint, which means it served me well. And then he would put it into the garbage can. I actually tried when my kids were little, when the tights would tear, I would say, we had this thing that we would say, thank you, you served me well, I'm sorry for throwing the garbage can. So they don't do it anymore, they're all grown up. But it inspired me that it carries over. Treat our furnishings with respect. Treat our homes with respect. Don't bang doors. Right? This is all a way of bringing up children with a dignity and a respect for every single person, no matter how small or large a role they may play in our life. I read a story about Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel. This is ready when he was older and infirm. He came to America during one Pesach Bein Hazmanim to interview Talmidim, to Faher, for the newsman. 300 boys were coming to be faher. The problem was that Rav Nosson Tzvi really, really did not feel well, and he wasn't up to it. So he asked it was a noted Talmid Chacham, he asked the young man if he could come to do the fahers, and Rav Nosson Tzvi would be there listening. And of those 300 boys, it says that only 20 were not accepted. But one of them, he called over to him, and he told him, I want you to come back next month for a faher because I want to accept you. And he told later to the other people who were there, he said, of the 300 boys, this bachar was the only one who gave Shalom Aleichem also to the imam who was doing the fahers. All the bachar gave him Shalom Aleichem. But to extend it, he said, such a bachar belongs in the mirror. To think past our comfort zone. I read another cute story about after the war, there was this man, his name was Shmuel Grunbaum. He was trying very hard to somehow get a parnassa to be able to support himself in those very difficult post-war years. He got a job in a grocery, delivering. And he realized after a while of working in the grocery that maybe he could go out on his own and do private egg deliveries. He would deliver eggs. I remember the days of milk deliveries. But he would, if people would have, you know, people need eggs in the morning, he would deliver it. And he advertised and he spread the word and he was waiting for his first customer. Who's going to give him this chance to build up his business? And sure enough, he got a weekly order, a standing order from a woman in the neighborhood, this was in Borough Park, who ordered, a standard every week on a certain day, she ordered a large amount of eggs. Anyway, one day, this Monday that he was delivering it, he comes to her house, she lived in an apartment building, he climbed all the way up the steps, put the delivery by her door of X amount of dozen eggs, and then he started going downstairs. When he was almost downstairs, someone comes in and says, we're looking to put together a minyan for Mincha. Could you come? He said, sure, he hadn't done yet, he'll join the minyan. Turns out in the basement of that building was the Skver Shtibel. They had their shul there, and he davened there. And he's watching, like towards the end of davening, someone's going around, and he's putting two eggs by this person's place, and three eggs by that person's place, and two eggs by that one. Before you know it, a lot of people in the shul had eggs near them, and he's thinking, one second, these are the eggs that I just delivered upstairs. What's going on over here? So he turned, the person next to him saw that he's looking, you know, quizzically at these eggs. He says, oh, upstairs lives the Skver Rebbetzin. This is the Borough Park branch. Upstairs are the Skver Rebbetzin, and there was this man who was really trying to get a parnassa. So she made a standing order of eggs, but she can't possibly use so many eggs. So every Monday we distribute the eggs amongst the people who are davening. Well, his heart was very warmed by the thought how she was mechaber him. She didn't give him tzedakah. She was mechaber him by giving him the business that he should feel that erach atzmai, that pride and that dignity. There's so many, I could go on and on. There's a story about Rav Pam, and often, I don't know how driving is in Baltimore. I don't know, the traffic and the driving habits. I hope it's better than the one I'm used to. But I sometimes think about this. Rav Pam was once in a car with somebody, and they were driving in the high, I don't know if it was a highway, or they were driving somewhere, and they were nearing a place where they two lanes merge into one. And there was a bus, it was not a school bus, don't worry. There was a bus near them, a full bus. And I would try to do this. If there was a bus coming, I would try to get ahead. I mean, I don't like to be stuck behind the bus. Rav Pam told the driver to let the bus go ahead because of Kavanat Tzibur. What are Gedolim think of? The story about Rav Moshe where someone gave him a ride and by mistake they slammed the door on his fingers. He didn't make a sound. He clenched his fist and he didn't make a sound that the person who drove him shouldn't feel bad. I remember years ago when I remember once as a teenage girl, as a high school girl, I was attending a speech. And it was my sister-in-law's mother who was also there. And she brought a tape recorder. You know those old-fashioned, they look like, I don't know, like microwaves of today. But it was a tape recorder. She wanted to tape the speech. And she plugged it in. It was not one of these remote things. She plugged it in and she put it on the table. And a lady walked by and she pulled on the wire. I don't think she tripped and fell, but she pulled on the wire and the tape recorder fell down and it popped open and it... And my instinctive reaction would be, if it was my tape recorder, I would jump up to see, is it okay? Did it break? Can I set it up again? And the lady would say, I'm sorry. I would say, no, it's fine. Don't worry. I watched my sister-in-law's mother. She did not budge from her seat. And the lady's looking around. Who is it? Who is it? And no one's budging. So she just like shrugged her shoulders and put it on the table. This woman didn't want to embarrass somebody who tripped and broke her tape recorder. And of course, the examples are endless. And if we reinforce these kind of stories in ourselves and we share them with our children, or we comment positively on ways that we see others being mechabed people, this leaves an impression on our children. And that brings me to the next segment. I know that the school is doing this kavod acherim, which is to all kinds of people, showing kavod to any person that we meet, anyone who services us, the bus driver, the school custodian, whoever it might be. And then this kavod chaveros, which is showing kavod for their friends. And of course, this is such an important part of that we as mothers have a chelek in encouraging our children to be inclusive and to include others and not always call the same girls or play with the same girls, but to reach out and to spread. I know the Moors are working so hard on this chelek of kavod chaveros. And then the third chelek, which the school will be focusing on, is kavod horim umorim, the kavod of teachers and parents. So the school will be teaching the children, but what I would like to convey to all of us is how we should partner with what the school is doing and realize the kayach that we have in enforcing it. There's a mashal about a person who had a very sick child, and there was a doctor coming with a medicine that he would be able to treat this child with. And I don't remember the mashal exactly, but they met on the bridge or something, and he didn't know that this was the doctor, and he threw his suitcase into the water. He was like, man, you know, he saw this person, and to chat with him, to start up with him, he threw the suitcase. And then the doctor came, and he said, when he came to the house, he said, I'm sorry, I can't help you. You threw the medicine that I brought for your child into the water. How chasushal, we shouldn't do that. When our children come home, it's something new that they learn. To embrace it and to reinforce it. To support what our school does. I remember hearing a story, Rabbi Shimon Finkelman was saying a story about once when he was a child, he felt he was treated very unfairly by a Rebbe. And he came home and he told the whole story to his parents, and he expected his parents to understand him and to support him. Alamaisa, in their family, the rule was the teacher is always right. And they reinforced what the Rebbe had said, and there was no way. And he felt bad. He felt hurt. But he knew that this was immutable. Years later, his brother, Rabbi Mordechai Finkelman, told him, you don't even know what happened behind the scenes. Our parents called him an owl. Our parents called the Rebbe. Our parents did this and did that and did the other. Whatever they could do to fix the situation. But he did not know about it. Because the greatest gift we could give our children is that we stand with our school and we support everything that they do. This extends obviously to support for das, to kavod for das Torah, kavod for Rabbanim, kavod haTorah. This is such an all-encompassing topic. Kavod for our Torah leadership, our children. It comes from us being careful, right? It has to be in us in order that it shouldn't happen that the children will see it, because sometimes it comes out instinctively. All these different aspects of kavod, and in the spirit of the decency of Hashas, which we all felt this tremendous simcha, and I'm sure you were able to see it via hookup, or if you were able to travel, I know how long the trip was. I want to share a beautiful story from Meir Shapiro that I just read, that when we reinforce to our children the importance of kavod chaveros. But Meir Shapiro, when he was a child, he was 6 years old, his father was learning with him, his father was his melamed. But he came to a certain point where he was a brilliant child, and he outgrew what his father was able to give him. So his father, there was a rav in the city, his name was a shatzerav, and he told the shatzerav he doesn't know what to do, he would want someone to learn with his son who can provide the instruction that his son already grew into. So the Shatzerav said that he learns with his own children, even though they're older, they were 9, 10, 11. He's confident that this Meirka will be able to keep up. They should send, he should send them to his house, which he did. So the little 6-year-old Meirka, Shapiro, went to the Shatzerav's house and he would learn with him. And then he would stay on afterwards and he would play with the children. They had children. And he would play with them. And in the course of their friendship, this little Meirka shared a dream that he had. He had a dream that one day all of Klal Yisrael will be unified by learning the same page of Gemara every single day. No matter where a Yid lives, Wherever he's going to go, he's going to be able to come into a shul, come into Beis Medrash, and they're going to be learning the same thing. And he was telling the other little kid all this. And they looked at him and they laughed. And they said, you think that could ever happen? You think such a thing could ever take place? You're dreaming. It's, forget it. Like little children would chop out and tease each other. Years later, after the first Siyum Hashas of Daf Yomi, Rav Meir Shapiro was at the train station. And who does he see? He sees the son-in-law of this Shatzarov that he learned with. And he went over to him to greet him, and he asked him, is your Rebbetzin here? And the Rav said, yes. He said, I would like to speak with her. And she approached, obviously at a respectable distance. And Rav Meir Shapiro spoke to her, and he told her, many, many years ago, when I was in your house, and I shared my idea of Daf Yomi, and you and your siblings teased me about it, I want you to know I almost gave it up. It was really demoralizing for me to hear that. Chas Be Hashem, I didn't. And I was thinking, looking around that stadium with 95,000 Yidden, plus I don't know how many listening in worldwide, to think that because of children's teasing and a lack of kavod, it almost didn't happen. Kavod is such a huge, huge part of what we need to infuse into our children, because the rippling effect on everyone, but most of all on themselves, is so huge. So now, if you're feeling like I'm feeling, you're thinking, why, this is such a tall order. How am I going to do this? So I'm thinking that probably many men this morning who are starting Brachas Amud Beis are probably thinking the same thing. So I want to share with you a thought from the Mashgiach Matzil Salomon, who spoke in our school. I'll just say this quickly. And he was before Shavuos. And he told the girls like this, girls, I'm going to tell you a secret that not too many Yiddish Kenelach know. And he told them like this, he said, when the Malach went around to each of the nations to offer the Torah, each one asked, what does it say in the Torah? And they were told specifically the mitzvah or laveira that's most difficult to them. Really, Mashgiach said, it was a very logical thing to do. No, you're going to accept this whole thing. You want to know what says. And then they didn't do a terrible thing by asking. So let's say Klai Yisrael would have made the same cheshbon. Before I commit, let me know what it is. What would they tell us? Which mitzvah would they choose, said the Mashgiach? What would the Malach tell us that's hardest for us? The Malach would tell us, Leiseilech Rachel Ba'amecha, no Lashon Hara. Now let's be honest with ourselves. If we had to commit to never, ever, ever talking Lashon Hara, would we be able to accept the Torah? I understand those going who didn't accept it. The Mashgiach said that Klai Yisrael knew a secret. They knew not to ask. They knew the secret called Naaseh B'Nishma. And what's that secret? The secret is, it might be a very tall order. It might be very difficult. But if we say Naaseh B'Nishma, I'm going to do it no matter what. I'm being machled right now, I'm doing it. I'll hear afterwards what I have to do. But I am making now the commitment that I'm doing it. Hashem gives extraordinary siyata d'shmaya. And that's really the bottom line. What is parenting all about? Siyata d'shmaya. But I would like to add, for the most part, we try to do the most we could. But sometimes there's a mother who is in a position right now she really can't. And I'm saying this for those mothers who might find themselves in this situation, hopefully temporary. There are times someone's going through an illness, someone's going through an emotional difficulty, someone's going through a loss, someone's going through tremendous financial distress, and you can only think about surviving. You can't see one inch past your nose. And then you hear this whole speech, oh, I'm a big fat, I'm going to overflow, I'm only overflowing with tears right now,
And I'm supposed to... I want to tell you something. A friend of mine was going through a very, very challenging life situation. And it pained her terribly. She was away from home a lot for treatments. And she was, even when she was home, she was in tremendous amount of pain. She was very, very limited what she was able to give her children. And she approached the very chashuv Rebbetzin to pour out her heart. And the Rebbetzin told her, you should know that what you give your children every single minute, just by being Aymed Ben Yisayim, and putting one foot in front of the other, and continuing to exist, you're giving them far more than you could ever give them in good health. So that's my chizuk. Na'aseh v'nishma. And know the Bnei Shalom knows how much you could do. And you don't have to do one drop more than that. Because really, the outcome is up to him in any case. And I'd like to conclude with a story. Years ago, the Jewish community in the Austro-Hungarian Empire was treated very benevolently by their Caesar, the Emperor Franz Joseph. He was very benevolent and very kindly towards the Yidden in his empire. And they felt tremendous amounts of hakaras hatov that they didn't have to live in fear and trepidation like in many other Jewish communities. And so once word came that the Caesar, he's going to come visit them. He wants to make a visit to this Jewish community. So all the askanim and all the rabbanim, they made a whole meeting how they're going to make a proper Kabbalah's panim for this emperor who is coming out to visit them that they want to show so much hakaras hatov to. And they're sitting around the table and they're discussing all the different details of how they could show utmost kavod to this Franz Yosef. And they're discussing different options until one Rav says he has an idea. In order to show tremendous respect to the Kesar, let's take out the Sifrei Torah from all the Arkadish in the entire city, all the shuls, and the Chashuvei Ha'ir, all the Chashuvah, the Rabbanim, are going to each carry a Sefer Torah, and with this we're going to go greet the emperor. And there were murmurs of approval all over the room. Everyone liked the idea. They thought it would make a very chashuv mamed. But then there was one Rav who said, 1 minute. He says, I have a problem with that. I'm not sure it's such a good idea. If we take our most chashuv object, our most chashuv thing that we have, and we take it to greet the emperor, what are we going to take to go greet Mashiach? So it's quiet in the room until one other Rav says, I know what we're going to go take to greet Mashiach. We're going to take our children, our most precious possession, and we're going to take these children in our arms. And ladies, this is what we're going to do. When we hear that shofar, we're going to take those children in our arms, and we're going to go to greet Mashiach, and we're going to say Mashiach. It was such a terrible galus. There were nisyanis on every level. There was such terrible spiritual pitfalls and such difficult life challenges. And these are the children that we raised with all our kayach and with all our energy and with our tears and our toil and our sweat. And that's what we are going to take to greet Mashiach. Ladies, he's almost here. He better be. He's almost here. Let's take these children in our hands and say, Rabban Shalom, these are the children that we were Mesen Nefesh to raise with every bit of strength we have. And let's hope that beautiful day will come very, very soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mrs. Philbrand. Ladies, as promised, the food and refreshments are